I think everybody who listens to the show knows that I'm not a fan of nepotism in a certain way where it's like, oh, you played for this team. We're going to hire you on as an advisor, a special person, a counsel to the president. This guy's getting this job. Every single season, it seems like someone retires and then they tie on with the organization with some made up title and they give them some money just to have them around the team. Every team does it. It doesn't boil my blood, but it tinges my jealousy because I would love to do that. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. I appreciate everybody. Or was my nickname Juice? I'm just trying to think now, Tim, if my nickname was Juice in high school. It was. Yeah, that's funny. Sorry, everybody. We were talking before we came on. And Tim said, he referenced the juice is flowing because I was excited for this show. And I was like, my brother's nickname in high school was Juice. But upon further review, my nickname was Juice in high school. I didn't like it, but that's what the guys called me in the upper class, the next class up. Like Cam Bigford, I remember, would call me Juice for some reason. I think I spilled juice on me, something silly like that. And it wasn't anything cool. Joke? Oh, yeah. Me. Yeah. You know me. Is can't get out of the weight room. Just roid it up, baby. No, but that's too funny. You know when something hits you and you just remember and you go, oh, okay. Then you're just thinking about it for the next 20 minutes. But anyways, thanks everybody for joining us today. A nice Friday, October 18th. We appreciate all the support. We're going to have a good episode today. Tim's got quite the agenda jam-packed with lots of fun stuff. Tim, I think everybody wants to know, though, it was your birthday yesterday. It was Julia's birthday yesterday, his girlfriend. Did you pop the question?
No. Yesterday we celebrated our birthdays. It was really nice. I went over her house for dinner and she had been cooking all evening, all afternoon. Really nice. It was like a pumpkin shaped pasta that she found at some like boutique Italian shop or something. But it was really good, like penne alla vodka sauce and some veggies mixed in there, all from scratch. It was really, really good.
Vegetables from scratch? How does that work?
The sauce from scratch. John, don't be John today. Just be.
But no, pasta from scratch, like, but she bought it.
Be more okay. Like him.
Okay, okay, okay.
But it was nice. It was nice. We had a nice dinner and just celebrated together. And the other thing, too, is that we didn't know Levi's birthday. We don't know it, so we just gave him the same as ours. So the three of us.
Oh, my gosh.
All the same birthday. That's the thing with rescue dogs, John. You don't know. I don't even know how old he is. So, yeah, three of us had a nice night.
He didn't. I didn't rescue him. You got a bumper sticker yet? Yeah. Not yet. That's exciting.
Nice. Yeah. It was good.
That's exciting. What did you guys get each other for gifts? Anything substantial?
I'm always complaining about like my back hurting and stuff like that. And even my leg still from the injury gets really tight a lot. So she booked me a massage at a really nice place here in town, like a spa type thing. And a couple other small things. And I got her this book from Key West. It's like one of those like art gallery, what do you call it? Like coffee table books, you know, that you flip open, but it's really beautiful. And she loves that kind of thing. And got her a little painting from an artist she liked up here and something else. I don't remember. A little mug. So yeah, a lot of small stuff. Christmas is coming up too. So more things will happen, but it was really nice.
Massage. Your leg from when you broke it, when you played hockey.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's like, it's still a mess of tendons and nerves down there. It hurts just about every day. You don't hear me talking about it though. I would never do that. Just fall and cry. I would never bring that up. So.
Oh, that's too funny. Well, good. I'm glad you had a good birthday. I have a lot of comments that I'll just keep to myself. We'll talk offline about it. But anyways, we did get this interesting tweet that Tim threw on the agenda. Who's this Joker, Tim, coming at us from Philly?
Well, I get a lot of tweets. I mean, you know, the show does. And I can't bring them all up. But I brought this one up because I thought it was good and worth mentioning. And it calls you out in a way that I think is fair. And this one's from Tyler. And he said, I wish John Scott pumped Philly's tires last season as hard as he did for Calgary's first four games. Everything he described the Flames to be was Philly for the first 65-ish games last year. So we spent a good amount of time on Calgary on Wednesday's show, and the comparisons are there in terms of dumping all these contracts, surprising everyone, playing really well. John, I'll let you respond first. How would you respond to this comment?
I think he's right. Yeah, I think we should have maybe been on the Philly bandwagon a little bit, because they did overexceed expectations and they were good and they were all he's completely justified. I agree. We should have maybe talked about him a little more, because they are Calgary Flames last year, but they did it for longer. So, yes, I know you're surprised by my take. But, yeah, I agree. Philly was a surprise team last year. I apologize, Tim.
It was, although we did spend a lot of time on Philly last year. But I think it was partly justified. But the part that's really different to me, and thanks for the tweet, Tyler, I responded to him yesterday. Philly wasn't paying anyone $10 million. Mm-hmm. That's the big difference. It's like you expect certain things. You didn't live up to it. You weren't supposed to be entering a rebuild when they made this trade, when they signed Nazem Kadri for $7 million. They got a defenseman they're paying six and change. So that was kind of the big difference there. But other than that, I think it's fair criticism. And while a team's undefeated, we're going to keep talking about it. And more teams keep losing, like Colorado and Nashville. But yeah, thanks for the tweet, Tyler.
Yeah, we appreciate it. All right, speaking of contracts, goaltender contracts have been flying out the window left and right lately. We missed Linus Ullmark's deal last week. Obviously, Jeremy Swayman signed his contract after that huge holdout and all the mess that was in Boston the last few months with Don Sweeney and Cam Neely and the back and forth. Jake Oettinger, arguably one of the best goaltenders in the league, maybe the best, has signed in Dallas. His new deal comes in at, strangely enough, exactly the same as Jeremy Swayman. 8 years, $8.25 million, same structure, same signing bonus. But, and this is a big asterisk, and this is the benefit, Tim, of signing in a state with no state tax. If the deal goes to terms and he doesn't get traded, Oettinger will earn $3.3 million more than Jeremy Swayman over the course of the 8 years. So, essentially, Oettinger makes more. Not fair, maybe, but that's the way the states work. What do you think of this deal? Because now, all of a sudden, Jeremy Swayman in the offseason, I want to set the market. You know, I want to push the pace. I want to, you know, set it up for the next guy. I know the responsibility that I have. He understood the weight of the decision of signing. All of a sudden, these goaltenders, Ullmark, Oettinger, Swayman, have signed for less than the market, you know, the top market value, which is Carey Price. It is Bobrovsky at $10 million. Now we're down to 8.25. But we'll start in Dallas. Do you think this is a good deal for Jake Oettinger and the Dallas Stars first?
Yeah, it's a great deal. Obviously, the player's getting a ton of money, so he's got to be thrilled about that. It's a great team deal for the team, too, because you could easily make the case that Oettinger should have and deserve more than Swayman did, just on the body of work, the playoff success. Yeah. He's been around longer. He's proven that he can do a legit number one job for a full season on a great team. So the fact that he signed for the same term is a win for the player and the deal and the team. It also, a couple other thoughts, it doesn't make both the Stars and Oettinger come out looking better than Swayman and the Bruins. Like the Bruins kind of got outclassed by the Stars on this, and same goes for the player, where Oettinger didn't make a stink. He didn't talk about setting the goalie market. He didn't go to the media and make these comments, and obviously the Bruins did and the Stars didn't. So I feel like the Bruins and the whole organization kind of has egg on their face right now. But yeah, great deal for the team and for the player.
Yeah, there's something to be said about just keeping it all in-house and sitting back. And I'm sure the Bruins wanted to do that, but they kind of shot themselves in the foot the year prior when they took Swayman to arbitration. So going into that whole contract renegotiation, everybody was salty all the way around. So yeah, this is a great look for the Dallas Stars. And it's a great deal. And they didn't have to go through all the rigmarole of the back and forth and the negotiations. And maybe they did, but it was behind closed doors. So Jim Neal nails it once again. And don't look now, when you look at the Dallas Stars roster, they have everybody locked in for a long time. They got Heiskanen, they got Lindell, they got Hintz, they got Oettinger. They will figure out the rest of the young kids. They'll figure out the Wyatt Johnsons, the Stankovens, those types of guys. They're still on RFA, so they're due to get a raise. But when you look at how this team's set up, Tim, for the near future, they're going to get Jamie Benn off the books this year. That's $10 million. That's going to be a nice lift. You get Matt Duchene off, you get Dadonov off. All of a sudden, you got $15, $16, $17 million you can pay those young kids. And your team looks great for the next 10 years or 7 years, right? Because you'll still have Rupe Hint signed, you got Sagan signed, but you have your young core locked up for a long time. So the job that Jim Neal has done to stay relevant and competitive while recycling his roster has been really, really great. And he's not sacrificing first round picks every deadline. He's not going out and getting the high flying star to supplement his offense. He pretty much holds pat every deadline. I know we brought in Chris Tanev, but other than that, they're pretty just in-house type team where they just, this is what we got. This is what we're going to roll with. So I think he's done a great job as a GM for this team the last 4 or 5 years. And they, again, are a threat to win the Stanley Cup. I don't like all the signing he's made. But, you know, not everything's perfect, but just how he's structured his team, you're not looking at it going, oh, they're going to be in a cap hell, Tim. They're going to be in trouble for a long, long time. And that could have been the case when they had Sagan and Ben both making almost $10 million and they were just really not performing. He pivoted, good drafting, good trading. All of a sudden, you have another star in Rupe Hintz. You had Jason Robertson come in. You have Mason Marchment come in. And you're like, okay. We did it. Somehow we pivoted, and now we have a new crop of good young stars to carry this team into the future. So good for them. And then you get this Ottinger sign at a reasonable deal for a long time. And Ottinger's only 25 years old. This kid's a stud. So, some GMs just know how to do it. And he's one of them, you know?
Yeah, and it goes with the drafting, too, like bringing all these kids. There was, I think, Ottinger, Heiskanen, and Robertson were all the same draft, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy. And it wasn't nil, I think. It was it the owner, like, 2-3 years ago that called out Ben and Sagan?
Yes.
How far we've come from that, where those contracts are on the back end now. There's nothing here that scares me. Like, having all these guys long-term, you almost always have, like, a Carlson type or someone else, Couture or whatever, that you know, like, okay, it's fine now, but 2-3 years, that's going to be an ugly contract. There's nothing like that here. They're young, they're talented, they're locked up long-term, and it's a well-balanced roster, too. Like, you have the goal, you have the defense, you've got the forwards. I think most of the teams in West are looking to this as the standard now. Like, this is the gold tier team set up long-term and probably the entire league, you know, both now and in the future. So, really exciting time for the Stars fans.
Yeah, I think the one contract they could do without is the Tyler Seguin. But, you know, he's had injuries, he's had issues, he's came back, he's played okay, you know, averaging a little under a point per game the last 2-3 seasons, but makes $10 million. Like, you need a bigger impact from that guy to warrant that contract. But again, because they've added those other players, he hasn't had to be that guy. But yeah, when you make 9.85, like, you need to be in the Hart Trophy candidate, like, conversation every single year. And this guy hasn't been that in the last 4 or 5 years, I want to say, since he's been at peak Sagan. But he's moving on. Looking at Ottinger's contract, you know, we talked about Swayman 8.25, Ullmark 8.25. This puts a little bit of a logjam in that area of 8, 8.5. That seems to be where all these goaltenders are landing. Is the goaltending market being reset, Tim? Where now the ceiling is 8.5 with Connor Hellebuck, and everybody seems to be falling in under him at 8.25. Is this the number going forward that we're going to see?
I think you have to think that, because we were all worried that all the goalies were going to start for $10 million, right? Because you had Carey Price a few years ago, but that was, like, definitely an outlier at the time. And then obviously Bobrovsky, and that one didn't look good, and then he ended up earning it. And you start thinking, okay, all these young goalies are entering their prime, signing long-term, it's going to be $9, $10, $12 million, whatever, but they all signed in the $8 million range. And these are, like, the cream of the crop. Sorokin, Ottinger, Swayman. So this kind of, the obvious thing is Shesterkin. Can he still ask for more than $10 million? I mean, I know he will, but, like, what's his number gonna be? Can he really make the case that he deserves $2 million more than all these other guys? It's gonna be harder to make that argument after these contracts landed.
Yeah, it's all about leverage, and I would have said the same thing for Jeremy Swayman, and I have to, you know, rethink the way I'm thinking, because Swayman had all the leverage in the world and he's still only signed for 8.25. So, yeah, I think the market is set. And if I'm Chris Drury, I'm sitting there going, good. Yeah. Like this is good for us because Shesterkin can't, he can't ask for $10 million. He can ask for it, but I don't think he can get it now based on just the recent contracts that have been given out. Because if I'm a GM, which I'm not, and I'm looking at these goalies, just say you throw all of them in a bag, Shesterkin, Ottinger, Allmark, Swayman, Sorokin, Hellebuck, and they're all 8.5 or less. Is Shesterkin the best goaltender in that group? Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe if you throw Vasilevsky in there, Vasilevsky's got how many cups under his belt? Three. He's proven himself. He's got multiple Vesnas. He's done it. Shesterkin is a very good goaltender. Don't get me wrong, but is he that much better than a Sorokin or a Hellebuck or an Ottinger? I don't think so. I really don't. So to warrant 10.5 now, it seems a little bit too much, especially when the Rangers and every other team, I don't think they value the goaltending position, rightfully so, like other positions. If I'm sitting there and I'm Chris Drury and I have to give out $8.5 million next year, I'm giving it to Lafreniere before I'm giving it to Shesterkin. As crazy as that sounds, I think Lafreniere has a bigger impact on that team in the next 8 years than Igor does.
Well, even if his number comes down to like, he deserves more than these guys. That's unquestionable, right? So maybe it's nine.
Well, I don't think that's that went black and white there. I don't think he's that much better.
But he is better. I agree he's not that much better, but don't you think he deserves more than Swayman and Ottinger?
I would give him 8.5, maybe 8.75. Yeah.
Let's say it's that, or let's say it's even nine, right? Like, how much of a difference does that make in a player's eyes? Is he looking at this saying, oh crap, I'm going to be not 10.5, but maybe nine and a half. Is that like, I know it's a lot of money in the sense that $1 million per year, but he's still going to be making $70 million of the length of the contract or whatever it's going to be. So is that a huge deal to a guy?
Yeah. Yeah, especially hockey players. You want to be the best. You have that pride. So you want to know you're valued by your team. And when you look around the league and you think in your head that I'm the best goaltender, I should be compensated for it. So yeah, it is a thing. And just going back to the state tax, just say he signs for $9 million, so 8 years, that's $72 million. Tim, he's going to get whacked for 50% of that. Like he's going to get absolutely killed on taxes in New York, especially if he lives in the city. There's an extra bump for living in the city. And it is a lot of money, but he's only taken home 35 of that, half, which is bonkers compared to Ottinger, who gets the lion's share of that, and compared to Bobrovsky, who's just killing it at $10 million living in Florida. Same with Vasilevsky, he makes 9.5. Yeah. So it's just, I guess it comes down to just let's just take the five goalies that have contracts signed right now.
Yep.
Hellebuck, Sorokin, Swayman, Allmark, and Ottinger. Who's your number one of those five right now? If you're building a team, Tim, who's your number one from those five? Because they're all very good goaltenders.
Yeah. Well, my head jumps right to Hellebuck, just because he's got the hardware. He's been around longer. He's just an established elite goalie, but he really stunk during the playoffs. Ooh. That makes me really nervous.
Yeah.
The next one is Sorokin, who's come down to earth the last, 18 months or whatever, and looked much more human than he was, where he seemed like he was as good or even better than Shesterkin for a season or two. So that one makes me nervous too. Allmark is great. You're going to think I'm a homer. I'm going Swayman.
Yeah.
I think just because of the age, because of he's got the attitude for it, and then he was just absolute nails in the playoffs, arguably the best player in that entire series, if not, the whole playoffs for what he was doing. So he would be my guy, but you can't go wrong with any of them.
Yeah, Swayman's good. I'm going to go with Ottinger. I think he's terrific. You know, he's done it every single year. I know he plays on a good, solid defensive system-minded team. And when you look at all these goaltenders, they kind of all do. You know, Winnipeg has a good, solid system. The Islanders really pride themselves in their defensive structure, especially with Lamoriello there leading the charge. And then the Bruins, we all know them. That's Swayman and Allmark. So they all play for a pretty good defensive system, good defense in front of them. But I think Ottinger is he's a solid goaltender. I like him, but they're all good. Like I said, you can't go wrong. But anyways, moving on. Oh, you got one more thing to say, Tim.
Well, while you were talking, I was trying to find this tweet I saw the other day, and I don't know why I didn't save it. I usually do, but It was between, it was about Ottinger and Swayman speaking. I don't know if it was before or after Ottinger signed the deal. And Ottinger kind of made a little comment about how he saw what Swayman went through and was glad he didn't have to do the same. And I was trying to find it, and maybe I'm spreading misinformation because I can't find it now. But if they spoke and he made that comment, it really shows how much the Bruins really screwed that up.
Yeah, they're, I think they're the same draft class. They're both 25 years old, both really good goaltenders and vastly different contract negotiations. Crazy. Yeah. Ottinger, they just sit back, don't say anything, play hockey, 8.25, or go in the press, air your dirty laundry, get pissed off, go back and forth with the GM and the president, get your agent to do some stuff in the press, stir it all up for 2-3 months, and then sign 8.25. Which is where you started at, probably. Yeah. Or like, it's just bonkers. And Ottinger's like, yep, yeah, sounds good. I'll take that deal. Let's go. Move along. All right. A team that's having an issue here, the Detroit Red Wings. And I've been thinking about this for a long time, and I don't know how this is going to go with people, but I think everybody who listens to the show knows that I'm not a fan of nepotism in a certain way where it's like, oh, you played for this team, we're going to hire you on as an advisor, a special person, a counsel to the president. This guy's getting this job. Every single season, it seems like someone retires and then they tie on with the organization with some made up title and they give them some money just to have them around the team. Every team does it. It doesn't boil my blood, but it tinges my jealousy because I would love to do that. But then it gets real when they give these guys real titles. You know, there's one thing to be an ambassador, you know, show up, you know, shoot the breeze with the fans, go and, you know, work the press box, you know, get the corporate sponsors a little loving. And it's another thing to be, oh, I'm going to jump on the ice a little bit if I'm Nick Lidstrom and work with the young kids once a month, you know, give them a treat. I get that. That's fine. I experienced that throughout my career where the retired guys would come on and shoot the breeze and it was fun. There's that. And then there's giving them the keys to the whole organization, Tim. And it's like, you're the president, you're the GM, control everything, carte blanche, go for it. And teams have been doing that lately. And I just want to get your take because to me, it makes me a little nervous. And when you look around the league, there's a handful of teams that have done that. The LA Kings, Rob Blake, Luke Robitaille, two Hall of Famers. Probably their numbers are raised in the rafters of the Staples Centers. The Philadelphia Flyers just did it with Danny Briere and Keith Jones. The New York Rangers have done it with Chris Drury. He's dual title, Tim, president and GM. And then the team I want to start on is the Detroit Red Wings. Stevie Y, president of hockey operations. The guy runs everything. GM, owner probably, bought the team. He does everything. He came in and the Ilitch family just said, it's yours. We saw what you did in Tampa Bay. You turned that team around. Stanley Cups. I know you didn't get to enjoy any of the Stanley Cups because they won it as soon as Stevie left. But here you go. Resurrect the Detroit Red Wings, the once proud team that you just thrust into the national spotlight when you and you're here winning Stanley Cups with Fedorov and Shanahan and Hull and Hasek and Lidstrom and all these teams. Well, fast forward. He's been there how many years, Tim? Maybe 4 or 5 years?
More.
More than that? Has it been? It has been.
I think he drafted Seider in 2018 or 19.
Yeah. I think you're right. So he's been there a while. Zero success. Everybody kept saying when he first came to Detroit, well, wait till the bad contracts leave. You know, wait till we get out of Jonathan Erickson and then you got Abdelkader. Once those contracts leave, then he's going to put his stamp on this team. Okay, well, that didn't happen. Wait till he gets some draft picks that he picks and develops. Okay, we got Lucas Raymond. We got Mo Sider. Still hasn't happened. Well, wait till he gets some free agents. Guys are going to want to play in Detroit. It's a destination. Guys want to be a part of the Stevie Yzerman plan. Okay, you go out, you sign Kopp, you sign Perron, you sign Kane, you get Tarasenko. Okay, they still suck. So what happens now? Wait till he gets his coach. Okay, well, he's had his coach. Lalonde, he brought him in. This is Yzerman's guy. At what point, Tim, do these guys lose favor with the ownership? At what point do the fans say, okay, I get it. Like, you were a good player. It ain't working. The Red Wings now are 1-3, 1-4. A terrible start to the season. They just got waxed two straight games by the New York Rangers. They got waxed by the Pittsburgh Penguins to start the season. They beat the lowly Nashville Predators for their only win. And they're losing games in pretty bad fashion. The special teams is atrocious. The goaltending is suspect. And like I said from the outset of the season, their defense is porous. Tim went head-to-head with me. The defense is going to be good. Okay, well, early projections and signs are not good. So my question, we won't touch on that, Tim. At what point did they get fired? How long is their rope, Tim?
I mean, I feel like we've been beating this drum for a while, right? Like, how much more can we say about it? I think you've been pretty critical of the Iser plan for going on 3 years now. Yeah. I don't have a problem with the nepotism aspect of it as a rule, just because so many of these guys, like, they still get vetted. They probably get, you know, like, more favorable a look through the whole process if you're already a guy that's been in the organization, loved by the city, all that stuff, and maybe you go to the top of the list, but you still got to do the job. You still got to present your plan and all that. And a lot of these guys, they know the game. Like Eisenman knows the game. Sakic knows the game. Briere, Drury, all that stuff. So I don't have a problem with any of that. The Iser plan is not working. I agree with you there. Because I think even with, like, the Sider pick, and then he wins the Rookie of the Year after taking a guy off the board, sixth overall, I think it was, and all of a sudden you're like, okay, Eisenman is seeing stuff that other people aren't seeing. That was, like, the peak of people believing in the system and believing him winning that award and doing what he did that entire rookie year. 50 points, too. And then not much has happened ever since. And every time we talk about Detroit, we have people tweeting in on us saying, oh, you have to look at the guys in the system and Kopp and all these other guys, Sherrod, are not as bad as you think. And this is happening and that's happening. And yeah, they're not a terrible team. You know, they're not what Arizona used to be. They're not the Sharks. They're not the Sabres. Like, they're going to be pretty good. They beat pretty good teams. They seem to always beat the Bruins. And yet they haven't made the playoffs in how many years? You know, and you don't really see, like, do you see a path forward to the playoffs even this year? Like, Pittsburgh looks better than you. Washington looks better than you. Like, all these other teams, like, the Flyers could leapfrog you. I don't even know if you're better than Buffalo, as bad as they've been. So, there's a lot of good teams in the East. And what road do you see for a playoff spot? I understand it's October 18th, but you've seen nothing the last couple of years. And there's no reason to think this year is going to be different. So, I don't know. I part of me is just still, I don't know if it's just the mysticism that surrounds Eisenman, where you just sort of blindly trust him, because part of me still feels it, but the rope has got to be short. So I don't know what conversations are happening behind closed doors, but if I'm guessing, if it was you, you'd let him know that his job's on the line right now.
Yeah, I would have gassed him. I would have gassed him, I think, two off seasons ago, because it's a what have you done for me lately type league. And I think when you get these Hall of Famers into the building, it's hard to let go, because you don't want to ruin that relationship. You don't want to get the bad PR from the fans. It's a very tricky situation, because there is that connection that they have to the past, to the fans, to success. And then you want that moving forward. And it's hard to fire those type of guys. Like, it really, really is. So I truly think he's got a few years left, unfortunately, because he's earned it based on his play, but he hasn't earned it based on his management skills in Detroit. So I don't know. The signings that he has made, like Andrew Kopp, JT Compher, good players, but really, is that what we're doing here? I know Larkin, Raymond, DeBrincat, all studs. Sider, we get that. But it's how you fill out the rest of your team and the stuff you do to compliment those players is what wins you Stanley Cup. And we all know how I feel about the back end. Sucks. So, like, signing Ben Sherratt, Justin Hall, Jeff Petrie, Olli Maatta, Gustafsson. They suck. You know? And that's the thing. They don't suck. Like, if you put Ben Sherratt in a position where he's the 3-4 guy or the 4-5 guy, and let him, you know, kill penalties and get his 16, 17 minutes. Good defenseman. Very good defenseman. When you put him with Mo Sider and you play him 24 minutes a game, then he sucks. You know, so it's all in a matter of perspective how you look at things. When you take an Olli Maatta and you play him this much or in this position, he could be a good 5-6 guy. That's where he lives. but I think you're forcing it. And he just doesn't. Same with Justin Hall. Oh gosh, this defense is atrocious. I don't know how you defended it. Like, I really don't know how that was even a thing. And then you signed Cam Talbot, and your Billy Husso was the guy. You just buried him in the minors, and he's mismanaged a goaltending situation terribly in Detroit. All three of those guys are not the guy I want to rely on. You got Talbot, Lyon, and Husso. So
even Alex Lyon, like, I remember he came up with Florida. It came kind of came on the map a couple of years ago. He's been in Detroit for 2 years now. I thought he was like a young up and coming goalie. He's 31.
Yeah.
He's a journeyman. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's played most of his career in the minors and stuff. And so, you're right. I don't know. They're sort of stuck in that no man's land again, because they're not bad enough to tank. They're going to compete for a wild card spot the entire season, but you don't see any path for them like gaining that spot. And even if they do, like, who could they upset in the first round? Nobody. So I don't know.
It's just an interesting thing to think about. Like, how do you get rid of these guys? It's all fun and games when you sign them and you bring them into the organization, but then you're stuck with them. It's like, okay, now we have Brendan Shanahan in Toronto. Like, he's worn out his welcome for years. That guy should have been gone 4 or 5 years ago. And then you saw Mark Bergevin in Montreal. He outwore his welcome for a long time. And they finally got rid of him after just terrible, terrible decisions and this and that. So it is harder to fire these guys. It's fun for the fans. It's fun for the president to bring them up and give them the jersey. And, you know, you get all the accolades. And it's like, oh, crap, these guys, they run the team. Like, do they really know what they're doing? Like, they were fantastic hockey players. Does that translate to being a manager? Some would say no. Some would say yes. All right. Only time will tell. I think he lasts a season. I think Lalonde lasts a season. But they shouldn't. They should be fired. You should be held accountable for your results. And it just doesn't happen with these guys quickly enough. All right. Moving on. What's going on in Vancouver, Tim, with Elias Pettersson?
Yeah, I was reading Daily Faceoff this morning in my kind of morning news cycle, as I do most mornings. And I was kind of, I guess I wasn't paying close enough attention. I know Vancouver struggled, but Elias Pettersson has pointed out in this article. So he's got only 1 point, and it's an assist in 4 games this year. Whatever, 4 games. But it goes back to last year. In the regular season last year, he had just 1 goal in the 11 games in the regular season leading up to the playoffs. And into the playoffs, he only scored 1 goal in 13 playoff games. So he was invisible at the end of the year. He was invisible in the playoffs, and now he's invisible again as we start the regular season. He just signed a huge deal. 8 years, $92 million. He is the franchise guy along with Quinn Hughes. He is the future cornerstone of your offense. And yet he's producing nothing in, you know, I don't know, 30, 40 games now. Is this alarming to you in terms of, like, is this a rough stretch? Or is it what I think is just, we have to get used to him being a streaky player. And this is going to happen frequently throughout his career.
I don't know. Because you look 2 years ago, he dominated 102 points. And even last year, he had 89 points. So he must have been doing something right up until the last 11 games of the season, where he was absolutely killing it. Like, he was on fire. So it's a cause for concern. But no, I don't think so. I think this is a pretty dangerous guy on the ice, and he will right the ship. There has to be something going on, you would think, because that's a big sample size where it's like regular season, playoffs, and now – I don't know, because you would hope not, because they have a great team and he's shown that he can carry this team. I was off the Pettersson bandwagon. Then I went back on it 2 years ago, and he's been great for the last 2 years. And now all of a sudden, maybe things are shaky a little bit, but I'm going to stay on it. I think this guy is a good player. I don't think he's a streaky player, but who knows? The Canucks just can't seem to have good starts for whatever reason. They just can't do it.
I mean, yeah, like Besser and Hughes are playing fine. JT Miller is playing fine. I don't know. It just makes me a little nervous. It seems like most of the players got so much better and the team got so much better under Tocchet, but maybe something about the Tocchet-Pettersson thing isn't working either. But he's been really successful under him too. So I don't know.
He got 89 points last year. Yeah. He had a great year.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I wouldn't look into it too much. Give him a little more leeway. I think he's earned that, as crazy as that sounds coming from me. But yeah, when you make 11.6, you need to be more than a point per game. That's how the league works now. If you're making 10 or 9 plus, we need you in the 100-point territory. That's where you live. So when you're only getting 1.4 games, that's not good, especially where this team is at. Like, you've won one game. I know it's early, but don't look now. The Kraken are improved. The Flames are doing good. The Knights are doing good. The Oilers will improve. So it's you're not a shoo-in for the playoffs, but you got to start winning games. So I don't know. We'll keep an eye on it, Tim. But I don't think it's the panic button time just quite yet. I don't think it's a streaky player type label just quite yet.
But okay.
Getting fair. There. We're getting there. All right. What else are we doing, Tim?
We like to do this a few times a year, is check in on the three best teams in the league and the three worst teams. Would you like to do best or worst first?
I think it's fun to do the best. Let's start positive and just get those good feelings going. Well, you think the Bruins are the best. We all know that. Who's your two and three?
I'll say my top three right now are the Devils. You got to give it to them, 10 points. I know they play more games, but they look great. And I'm going to, it feels weird not to pick the undefeated team, but I'm going to follow that up with Dallas and the Rangers. I think those are the top three right now. A lot of love for Calgary, what they've done, but they're outside the top three.
Yeah, my number one is the Rangers. I think they've been playing great. Panarin's playing lights out. Shesterkin's playing solid. Lafreniere, the whole team's been playing really, really good. I don't think the Devils are there. I think they've been buttressed up by a couple easy wins versus easy teams, and they've taken advantage of good, you know, porous competition when you play the Buffalo Sabres twice. They beat the Utah Hockey Club. They beat the Ottawa Senators. So yeah, maybe they're not quite the team that we think they are, but they're good. They're not in my top three. I'm going to go the Rangers, Dallas Stars, and I think you do have to go with the undefeated team. So I'm going to go with the Calgary Flames. Just based on now, it's only 4 games into the season. They are the best team in the league. They have not lost yet. Nobody's been able to crack that nut. So those are my top 4. 3, top 3.
The bottom 3 I think is a little bit more fun and a little bit easier. I think you have to give 2 is Nashville and Colorado. Colorado especially, they are the worst team in the league right now. They look bad. Even McCarr said the other night that the team would be better off without him playing, which is crazy. He said that after game 3. And then they lost to Bruins in the other night. So they're the bottom. Nashville's right there too. They've got to figure that out. And then we kind of get into a bunch of teams who are sort of tied with 2 points. But I'm going to give it to the Sharks. They're the only 0-2 team. We know they're a bad team. 0-2-2, I should say. We know they're a bad team. No surprises there. They're without Celebrini right now. So the Sharks, Avs, and Preds are my bottom 3.
Yeah, it's a strange list this early in the season because the Avalanche are my worst. Isn't it bad? They give up an average of 6.5 goals a game. They've played 4. That's that's bad. Like, that's historically bad. And it's not that they're not scoring a lot of goals. They are putting up decent goals. They average 3 goals a game, or just over 3 goals, which should be enough to win some games. But they've let in 25 goals in 4 games. That's absolutely atrocious. And the Predators, they just can't score. They've only scored 8 goals in 4 games. They just start, for whatever reason, something hasn't clicked yet for them. They're not in my bottom 3, the Predators. My bottom 3 are the Avalanche, the San Jose Sharks, and then my worst team is the Buffalo Sabres, unfortunately. I just feel like it's just the Sabres. They played 6 games. They just can't seem to figure it out. There is already fighting in practice. The guys don't like each other. They got waxed by the Columbus Blue Jackets last night. They have played a lot of teams that they should have beaten. The Penguins, the Blue Jackets, the Devils. Like, those are teams they should compete with, and they just don't. So, unfortunately, I'm a Buffalo guy. I want them to be good, but right now they are my worst team in the league, which is crazy because all those good young contracts, all those guys up front that you just invested in, and you still can't figure it out. I just don't know what these guys need to do. So yeah, they're my worst team. It's hard for me to say, but yeah, it's the Sabres.
Yeah, it's strange. It's strange because I got fooled by the Sabres again. I thought that Pekka Luukkonen was going to be one of the better goalies this year. He's not. All these young talent. I thought that bounce back year for Tage. I thought, you know, Jack Quinn and all these other guys would step forward, and they just haven't, which is a bummer.
How much do you think they regret trading Omark or letting him walk and go to Boston?
Yeah, probably a good amount. What was the trade? Was it was that the one that they got? I don't even know. I don't remember. Nobody, right? It was.
I can't remember how it came out, but now they have that Ukko Leinonen and they have Devin Levi, who were all, they're decent goaltenders. But listen, Linus Allmark, He's a good goaltender. I don't know what they traded for him, but yeah, it's unfortunate when you have a guy like that and you just let him go. So
I was mixing it up with the Taylor Hall trade. But anyway, a couple quick hits here and then we'll wrap up. The first one, Luke Shen played his 1,000th game the other night, which is great. Really cool for him. Not often you see like a journeyman shutdown defenseman who's been up and down throughout the league stick it out for 1,000. And it's a great story. Hankinson tweeted this out, your old agent. He was 5 years ago, battled through three different AHL teams. He was waived multiple times. Couldn't figure it out. He actually worked with Adam Oates to work on skating and some other stuff. Then he stuck it out, made the roster with Tampa, played 300 more games after the crossroads, wondering if he had even had a job anymore, including 35 playoff games and 2 Stanley Cups with Tampa. So really cool for him and just a great story.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that you root for. Was he the one who his parents swindled him for his money? Or is that Jack Johnson? No, that's
Jack Johnson.
Okay.
But this is another guy too, where like a first round pick, high expectations, stuck it out. He leads the NHL in history with most career hits. He passed somebody recently in the last year or two. So cool story. It was Orpik. He passed Orpik. The next one here, Utah Hockey Club defenseman Sean Durzi undergoes surgery, expected to miss 4 or 5 months. Tough blow for them. He's a really important part of their defense. He was their most, their best defenseman before they signed Sergachev. So tough blow for that defenseman. We'll see who steps up in his absence. And the last one here, just wanted to call this out. You sort of mentioned Panarin's killing it. He had a hat trick last night. He's up to 7 points in his last 2 games and 11 points in 4 games right now. Just wild how talented he is and just a huge part of that offense.
Yeah, the Rangers are a fun team. They're going to be dangerous. So I don't. I'm looking for this Allmark trade. I can't find out who we got traded for. It's frustrating the hell out of me, but we'll never know.
We'll never know.
The internet's such a crapshoot sometimes. You think if you Googled Linus Allmark Sabres trade, it would come up, but everything just comes up to Brew and stuff. So
right, the trade to front to Senators from Boston.
Yeah, it is what it is. It's not super important. If you I'm sure everybody knows. Drop it in the comments. Let me know who Linus Allmark got traded for. Anyways, everybody, thank you for listening. We appreciate the support. We'll talk to you guys next week. Have a good weekend, everybody. Cheers.